Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome to the program. Good to have you along with us. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, we're back wielding the
old court.
We're back in court. We're wielding the gavel of justice yet again.
Okay.
Little bit of run here on the failure to file, failure to pay penalties cases. You know, last week we had a very intriguing case with regards to John Spotswood, who submitted his return via TurboTax, and then got the big rejection email, but failed to notice that he had received the rejection and thought his return was accepted. He had made an error on one of his children's social security numbers and got the rejection.
And didn't notice that the payment didn't go through.
Didn't notice that the $395,000 payment was not made. But nevertheless, he argued, you know, that, hey, look, I submitted my return. I tried. And it should count as a submitted return, even though it was rejected, because
it would have if it had been in the mail.
Because it would have if it would have been in the mail. That's exactly right. That was his argument. Unfortunately, fell on deaf ears with regards to the court, and they said, no, we're not going to go there. And then he also argued in the alternative that, you know, he found out that there was a mistake 18 months after he tried to file it, and immediately he went ahead and filed it. He had done everything he could to do to submit his return, but nevertheless failed. So therefore he asked them to just, you know, abate the penalty, waive the penalty, based upon reasonable cause. And again, deaf ears, he had an $89,000 penalty associated with his return, and he was responsible for paying it after the court issued its ruling. Interesting to see if he'll appeal that one.
That's a recent ruling.
Yeah, a recent ruling, so he may end up deciding he wants to go up the chain a little bit and make an appeal. Today we have Mr. Plato, and Mr. Plato. Let's see if you think he can get his.
I'm assuming that's Plato, not like Plato as in the purple stuff that you.
Yeah, that's right. Plato, like as in Aristotle and Plato.
There you go.
This guy wasn't Aristotle, I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
All right. So we got Mr. Plato, and, just bear in mind that, you know, what we're talking about here is if you fail to file your return timely, you're subject to penalties.
Right.
And so that is what we're contesting in these cases. In both of these cases, that the John Spotswood and now Mr. Plato, they're not contesting that they owe the tax, Ben. They're acknowledging, hey, look, I owe the tax. And they pay the tax. In all honesty, they go ahead and write the check for the tax. What they do is they go to tax court and say, hey, look, you know, cut me a break on these penalties, because I believe that I acted in a reasonable manner, and you should cut me a little slack. And so that's what we're really looking at in these cases. All right, so Mr. Plato, he separated from his wife in December of 2007, and they've lived apart from that time forward. At the time the case was filed, the divorce hadn't been finalized.
Yeah, she's with Aristotle.
but basically they're no more as far as a couple goes. And as part of the separation and divorce, they liquidated some accounts.
Right.
They liquidated some brokerage accounts. They liquidated some, a 401k to start splitting assets. And just bear in mind, all that has tax consequences. Whenever you're selling stocks, whenever you're, you know, pulling money out of retirement accounts, you're going to be hit with a pretty hefty tax bill depending on the nature of the assets.
Right. Penalties, it could be capital gains, all kinds of stuff.
That's exactly right. So, so that was December 2007. So fast forward to April 14th, 2008. When the return is due, Mr. Plato goes over. He's completed the return, a married filing jointly return, and he has signed it. He's got a check for $48,000, and he knocks on his wife's door, and no answer. So he takes the check, takes the return, and puts it under the doormat. Okay, and then he tells his wife, calls her later, and says, hey, look, I left the return and the check under the doormat. Just go ahead and sign it.
And put it in the mail.
And put it in the mail. If you can't get to it today, then make sure you get an extension to file because, hey, by the way, we're up against the deadline here. What do you think she did, Ben?
She didn't do it.
She didn't do it. That's exactly right.
Now, were they married or is
still married at the time? Okay. Yeah, they're just separated. Still married. So he left it under the doormat. Tells her to do it. She doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So flash forward, we're in April of 2008. Flash forward to May of 2014, mm-hmm. and he gets a nice little substitute for return in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So what this, Ben, is this is a document where the IRS says, we gave you a chance to file your return. Mm-hmm. It's been 6 years, for goodness sakes. We're going to file this return for you.
Right.
And this return, Ben, showed a liability of $165,000, mm-hmm. versus the $48,000 that Mr. Plato had reported. And also included all your penalties and all your interest and everything mm-hmm. else. So he was staring at a very, very significant tax bill. Well, he gets that in the mail and, you know, I guess was shocked. So he decides, well, hey, look, I got this old return that I had done, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day. I can't force my wife to sign it because married filing jointly is, of course, a voluntary election. Mm-hmm. I'll just check the box for married filing separately and I'll send that in as my response and say, you know, here you go. Here's a married filing separately return. And I'll send in the tax that's owed, which ended up being about $44,000 with the married filing separately return. So he sends that in as his response, but then also petitions to go to the tax court and says, well, I believe that I should get my penalties and interest abated.
Yeah.
So the IRS, again, they take the return and they actually agree. They agree with Mr. Plato and say, we believe that the taxes owed is not the $165,000 that we asserted on the substitute for return.
Mm-hmm.
We believe it is the $43,000 that you put on your on your married filing separately return.
However,
what about these penalties and interest? And so he gets in there, Ben, and he argues, and we'll let you wield the gavel and see if you believe that he has reasonable cause and has not acted willfully neglectful with regards to his responsibilities. He says, hey, look, I signed my return. I wrote the check.
Mm-hmm.
I gave it to my wife to let her mail it in. All she had to do was sign it and mail it in. She failed to do that.
Okay.
I did what I needed to do to make sure this return got filed. And oh, by the way, I've never had a problem with the IRS before.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in compliance with the IRS rules and regulations my entire life. This is my one slip up. So that's his argument is I did what I needed to do.
Essentially, he wants a prayer for judgment, like, right?
I did what I needed to do.
Yeah.
And I've been in compliance for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Tax Court Judge Ben Ball, what do you think? Did he act reasonably and without willful neglect?
Well, you know, they need to have the sound effect, like they do in Family Feud when they get it wrong. You know, they need to have that in a court. It says, no, I will say one thing differently about that. Maybe, although they accepted his taxa, he didn't need her to sign the check, right? He could have sent the check in.
Could have sent the check in. That's right.
Even if the return wasn't sent in, he could have sent the check in. And that would have certainly shown faith, good faith effort there.
That's right.
But he didn't do that.
Didn't do it.
So I don't think he gets a pass here.
No pass. You're right. He gets the big X and he gets the Family Feud X.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think is interesting here, Ben, is that, you know, he tries to make a kind of nuanced argument saying I lived up to my expectations. But I think the one flaw in his argument is that when you file married filing jointly,
mm-hmm.
the spouse has to be willing to sign the document. You know, whenever you're involved in a separation divorce, who knows if she wanted to sign that return? You know, there's no evidence on the record. There's nothing in the case about whether or not she was a willing participant. And by her not sending in the return, it shows that maybe she didn't want to sign it. And he could have always filed a married filing separately return. He could have signed the dotted line and sent the check in just as he did 6 years later when he found out they had filed the substitute for return.
Well, if I remember my numbers right, he would have saved $4,000.
That's exactly right. If he would have just gone ahead and sent in the married filing separately return. The other thing I think is critical here, Ben, is that he argues about being in compliance. And one thing our listeners may or may not know, we do talk about first time penalty abatement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the IRS right now, if you've filed and paid your last three tax returns on time, you can get what's called first time abatement, meaning that they will waive any failure to file, failure to pay penalties, is a good faith gesture.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is mention the word,
right,
first time abatement, and say that you believe that you qualify for it. And they'll look you up and see if you actually did file and pay on time. And if that's the case, they'll waive them. They'll even waive them over the phone when you're talking to them on the IRS. It's kind of one of those, you know, one of those, you know, pretty freely given things. So it's obvious there was something a little bit fishy because they didn't give him first time abatement, or it's possible, Ben, he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that there was this option out there for first. It didn't know to ask. And if that's the case, then, you know, that was just.
He didn't have an attorney.
He did not have an attorney. He was pro se.
Uh-huh.
But that's one that he easily could have probably gotten if he truly was, had this great compliance record that the case does, you know,
now,
mention that he says he has.
The wife was not a party to this?
Not a party to it, because, you know, once you don't file, you know, they could go get her for any you know, income she had. And it's obvious she had something if there was $4,000 additional tax owed.
Right.
But that would be her separate matter. So that's a good point here.
Now, did when they filed for him, did they file married filing separately?
Yes, that's right. They don't file you a joint or joint return.
Right.
So they take his tax attributes and they file a substitute
for
return.
That's why he's severable.
That's right.
That's why he's separated from her.
That's exactly right. They take him as a standalone. They take her as a standalone. So she likely got a substitute for return as well, and they both had to deal with it separately.
Okay.
One question I've got for you, Ben, is what happened to the check under the doormat?
Yeah. If it didn't get cash, I mean, this is another case like Spotswood there. Said, how did you not know that $48,000 didn't clear the bank?
That's exactly right.
Go find out more. You can email Andrew A. Foster at HarvellandCollins.com or call Harvell and Collins for an appointment.